You're listening to Economics of Place, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Dan Gilmartin.
Welcome back to another episode of the Economics of Place podcast. I'm Dan Gilmartin, the CEO of the Michigan Municipal League, and I'm joined today by Dr. Carolyn Lukensmeyer. And Dr. Lukensmeyer is the executive director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse. Now, I just listened to you talk for an hour. It was very engaging. But for those who didn't, tell us what the National Institute is.
Well, I'm delighted to share this with your listeners. The Institute was created in 2011 after the tragic mass shooting in Tucson, Arizona, where six people died, 13 people were injured, including Representative Gabby Giffords. And the community of Tucson and the University of Arizona came together very, very quickly and said, we have to make something good come out of this tragedy. And Gabby was always known for her bipartisanship, right, for her friendships across the aisle, for passing legislation that both R's and D's supported. So that's our mission, to bring people together across the divide.
It's a worthy mission, especially today, right, where we see some folks describe it as tribalism, or, you know, I'm a shark, you're a jet, so we can't talk together. And it seems to have gotten worse in recent years. Is that just something that's in our face a little bit more, or has this always been an issue?
It's a great question, and we get that question so often at the Institute that we finally reached out to some political historians on the whole ideological spectrum.
Right.
And whether they were liberal or conservative, they told us the same thing. They said that this little level of viciousness in political discourse and in our communities has not been seen in the United States since post-Civil War,
wow,
Reconstruction, and Jim Crow days. So there's no question. Yes, there have been many periods where our rhetoric was worse, but we're at a level we haven't seen since the end of the Civil War.
Right. It's pretty amazing. And I think there's probably a bunch of reasons for that. There's social media. There's the crumbling of the sort of unbiased news system, all kinds of different things. But whatever it is, it's something I think we have to do a better job with. And certainly you talked about that in your presentation earlier today. What do people get wrong about this, and what do they get right? I mean, when people sort of sit down and say, okay, we talk about this stuff when we're upset, right? And we're arguing with somebody about something. So we've already sort of staked out our spot, right? But what do we get wrong on this? What do we need to do as Americans or as just human beings?
So having listened all across the country, red states, blue states, purple
right,
states, the primary thing we get wrong is, if I'm a liberal, I think this is the conservatives' fault.
Right.
And if I'm a conservative, I think this is the liberals' fault. So there's very little
reflection. You need an enemy in the field, right?
Exactly, exactly. There's very little reflection of, oh, there may be some way I'm judging the other end of the spectrum that is also part of the problem. So in communities, we always work with people first to actually think through, what in my value system or what in my life experience brought me to hold the position I hold? And then how could I learn to listen, really listen for understanding about why you feel the exact opposite I do?
Yeah, and I think we're very quick to demonize too, right? It's, you know, the conversation happening in the sort of the national level, but it percolates down state level, photo level, families. You asked in your presentation how many of us have family members that won't speak to each other anymore and those types of things. But
I'll never forget a phone call we got after the 2016 election. It was a mother in New England who was in near tears. She said, we have two daughters. They're both in Ivy League schools in New England. They have not spoken to each other since the election.
Yeah.
What can we do at Thanksgiving to
right,
actually have a real Thanksgiving dinner?
Yeah.
And that led us to create a whole...
And those dinners are being had all over the country,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we did a whole set of tools on the web called Setting the Table for Civility.
Wow. And what are some things you share with people about trying to set that table appropriately for civility?
Well, the basic thing we talk about is to consider things that have been unifying in your family or have been shared views of things, and to set up the circumstances in which that's how you connect with one another. Potentially even to make an agreement, we really want a lovely Thanksgiving. We're not going to
right,
talk politics this
right,
year. We also did a set of trivia cards, which are still up on our website, which was just questions for people to ask each other at dinner. And frankly, 3 years later, we still get many, many messages about how much people appreciate those trivia cards about, and they're things like, who in my family is least likely to run for public office? Or who is the person in our community?
That's at the head of the table, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy what's going on right now, and it's really interesting. And I think when you look at it from a political perspective and a right-left perspective, what I've seen doing what I do for a living is if you go far enough to the right and you go far enough to the left, it's not a straight line. It becomes a circle, and they usually wind up back in the same place. You know, a lot of the people that I think people on both sides of the political spectrum feel disenfranchised for a lot of the same reasons. They've just, for whatever reason, decided to point their arrow at government or big business or environmentalists or whoever it might be out there, whoever their boogeyman is. But
if I take your example,
not that much difference, right?
Well, if I take your example, if you go far enough out, it comes a circle. I don't remember what academic did this, but in the 2016 election, it was a guy in political science at a Midwestern university, just took quotes from Donald Trump and quotes from Bernie Sanders, but took their names off
right.
it.
People
and
couldn't tell the
people,
difference, right?
They couldn't tell the difference.
Right. It's who brings it forward.
Yep.
It is amazing. It is amazing how we look at it that way. Is that, so you see this, I'm sure, it's obvious we're in a political position here in Lansing talking about legislative issues, and it's all sort of top of mind for us, but this kind of discourse isn't just political. It's more obvious there, but this happens in social circles, this happens in business circles, academia, you name it. We all sort of struggle right now in terms of how to, again, I'll use your term, set the table to make sure that you have an appropriate conversation.
You know, after the 2016 election, and it's continued right up till yesterday, the biggest surprise to me, we got calls from families, we got calls from pastors and rabbis and imams about their congregations being broken. The biggest surprise to me was we've actually gotten a lot of calls from major U.S. corporations who, you know, they just spend millions of dollars on team building every year.
Right.
And their question to us was, we have product development teams, so that's their bottom line 5 to 10 years from now, that have not come back to the same level of productivity since the election. And we wonder if you, and it's all about broken trust. It's all about, I don't see how you possibly could have voted for her or voted for him or whatever it was.
Right.
So we've actually tried a couple of pilots around taking the real gut-wrenching political difference and dealing with that amongst corporate professionals in the same way we deal with it from state legislators or from members of Congress. And it's working.
So if 5 years from now we're back here speaking and we're doing this podcast again, because of course it's so popular, it'll be even bigger in 5 years. And everything went right in America around civil discourse. And we're spiking the ball and saying, boy, we're in a much better place today. What happened?
Well, I'd first like to say, I think 5 years is very optimistic. I usually pick 10 years as the first time I think it's possible. And what I would say is we are more capable of having a discussion where we have a huge difference. It might be on immigration, it might be on climate change, but we have the capacity to stay present with one another and actually discover where the real difference is. And that we would see that happening in Congress, we would see that happening in state legislatures, and we'd see it happening in communities. It would be very traceable. It would be very measurable.
A lot of people point at the media. So the media is, we've always sort of seen the media as the bastions of getting to the bottom of issues and sort of the watchdogs of government and business or whoever. And now they're more blamed as being sort of biased and part of the problem, not part of the solution. Do you see it that way?
This is a really challenging thing to describe because it's been happening for a long time.
Right.
The business model first died in print, and it really began to shift in the early 90s, where states no longer had a reporter covering the state legislature.
Right.
If I'm a concerned citizen and I care about education funding, how am I even going to find out what's happening if the major newspapers in the state don't have a reporter in the Capitol? Then, of course, the internet really exacerbated that. And now, unfortunately, with the cable news, where channels were intentionally created to have an ideological bent. Hmm. One of the things we invite people to do when they sign a civility pledge with us is 1 hour each week on an issue that's hot, commit to watching
watch
the other side. And
right.
When people do this and they talk back to us, they say, my God, you wouldn't even know they were covering the same event.
I agree. Yeah, it's amazing. I do that on my own sometimes, and I'm like, this is like two different worlds.
Right now, I think we're in a real tough time in that some media has almost made a business model out of being pro-Trump or a business model out of being anti-Trump.
Right.
So that actually feeds into Americans looking at it
right.
and saying, who
and
can I trust?
And people turn in for the red meat. So
exactly.
Even on a slow news day, there's no red meat. They sort of stir something up from before and just sort of throw it out there. I've seen that happen a lot. Again, on all ideological sides, it's... Again, it's part of that sort of tribalism we find ourselves living in today.
And then, unfortunately, more and more people are actually getting their news on social media, which is from friends retweeting, which further moves people into their filter bubbles and very often completely not fact-based.
Okay, so the media bubble, that is an interesting thing because folks can... You can kind of self-select. And when you self-select as to who you're going to listen to, because they're going to tell you you're absolutely correct in thinking that, for example, the president is perfect or the president is horrible or your side is great or their side is bad.
Or climate change is real.
And you never get
real.
To hear that. Yeah, yeah, climate change is real. It's a hoax.
It's not real.
Whatever the issue is, I know there are places I can go where they'll tell me I'm exactly right about everything that I think. Yeah. And that's not good.
In some ways, Dan, this actually worries me as a threat to democracy more than the incivility, because I think we the people can do something about the incivility. But if we don't figure out a way to go back to fact-based information in terms of making public policy decisions, Thomas Jefferson said it. You can't have a democracy without an informed public.
Right.
And we're very close to having a large percentage of the public not informed.
Yeah. Anywhere in the country doing it better than somewhere else? Southerners better at this than Northerners? Are there big cities or small towns? Or, you know, is there a gold standard out there?
It's a great point. I can see more progress in small towns in terms of, because the fabric of the community, by definition, you're the florist, I'm the doctor, or you're the teacher, I'm the coach. But we still intersect in our lives all the time.
Right.
When a city gets to be a certain size, we actually can almost live our lives never coming in contact with anybody different than we are.
Yeah.
So there's some advantage to the small towns. The second thing I would say is there are some places that are doing very innovative experiments with journalism and media. I'll give you two examples. In the state of Ohio, and this is a statewide experiment, about 40 media outlets, print, radio, television, streaming, have gone together in a project, Your Ohio Voice. And they're practicing citizen-centered journalism, where they actually bring the citizens into the studio or into the reporting process. What issue do you want to hear about the economy, rather than taking an expert's place and overlaying and pushing that to the public? Now, they use expert information, but they start with citizens' interest. A group called Resolve in Philadelphia that is morphed out of the Philadelphia Inquirer is similarly really working to engage and have what journalists call radical transparency. How am I creating this story? Who am I talking to?
Right.
Where did I pull the facts from? Those kinds of innovations are really signs of hope.
Well, it's a worthy subject to be talking about for sure. If people want to learn more about your work, where can they go?
Please come to our website, www.nicd.arizona.edu. All of our conversation tools and discussion tools are up on a website that citizens can interact with, www.revivecivility.org. And our newest initiative, which gives you voice in policy issues, is www.commonsenseamerican.org.
Commonsenseamerican.org.
Please join us.
Okay, we will definitely do that. Dr. Carolyn Lukens-Myers, the Executive Director of the National Institute for civil discourse, and I think has a very powerful story and a very powerful message about what we as Americans need to do to make sure that our civil discourse leads us to what we all want, which is a prosperous, healthy, thoughtful society as we move forward. Thanks for being part of the podcast today.
Dan, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Will do. Thank you.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.